You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 21st of July, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I'll just begin today by reminding people once again, if you live in Wales, do sign up to join Patriotic Alternative. There is a Wales regional branch, and you can do that by sending an email to wales@patrioticalternative.org.uk. And once you do that, you can register with the regional organizer, and then they will arrange to meet up with you and get you involved in some positive community building activities. Well, today I want to really concentrate on something that I posted in the Patriotic Weekly Review Telegram chat last night, which is about hate speech and incitement to hate. Now, when the police accuse somebody of this, they have to show that there is an intent to incite hatred, and that's how the speech laws can be used against you. And I've pointed out before that the ways that they can do this is if you use racial slurs, or if you express support for violence against any ethnic minorities in your chats. But there's another way that they can do it as well, and this is fairly important, I think. It affects a lot of the way that we should be describing and discussing the subjects that we want to discuss. When the police are investigating these cases, what they are looking for is expressions of hostility. In actual fact, that actually forms a part of the hate crime guidance. Police are told to actively seek out incidents with any perceived element of hostility or prejudice based on a person's race, religion, sexual orientation, disability, or transgender status. And that is the official guidance to the police when they're looking out hate crimes, and also when they're looking out hate crime incidents, which, if we have time, we will also discuss a little bit today. Now, if you look up the word hostile in the dictionary, it says warlike, aggressive, adverse, contrary, unsympathetic. And this is important because a lot of the terminology that we use as nationalists, or the terminology that I hear being used by nationalists, could sometimes be described in these ways. If you're talking about a war against whites, for instance, then you are using warlike language. I mean, it could even be said that using the term white genocide, because you're using the term genocide, in most people's minds, that is associated with war. They don't understand that the actual UN definition of genocide can be any policy that replaces one group of people with another. It doesn't have to involve violence. Also, when people are talking about white genocide, they are referring to white people doing that to ourselves. It's our own politicians that are responsible for the immigration policies which are replacing the indigenous people in white countries. So is it really the accurate term to use? Can you genocide yourself? I mean, if you're genociding yourself, it's actually suicide. So the term would, to a more accurate term for that would be white suicide. Would that really get the truth of what's going on across? Would people understand that if you said white suicide? Well, I'm not certain that the average general member of the public understands what we mean when we say white genocide. I mean, it could be misinterpreted to think that these other groups are trying to genocide us. And even if you're going to use terminology where you liken what's going on to parasites and hosts, I mean, is a tapeworm trying to genocide human beings? No, it's not. A tapeworm is simply parasiting off its host. It doesn't wish to kill its host, does it? It just wishes to take what it can from it. So even if you're using terminology like that, which would be described as hostile, because it could be described as being unsympathetic to the group that you're talking about. If you're referring to them or likening them to parasites, it could be described as unsympathetic, depending on the way that it was talked about. But even parasites aren't trying to genocide their hosts. They're not trying to murder their hosts. They're just trying to live alongside them in the way that they were created to do. That is what comes natural to them. So we have to be careful that we're not using warlike language. I mean, the most obvious one would be talking about a race war. And obviously, we have talked about things like that in the past, but with the goal of avoiding one and saying that we wish to avoid one. And really, when people are mentioning a race war, what they're talking about is a civil war, because we have lots of different races living in our countries. If there was a civil war, then that would break down along racial lines, and it would be the equivalent of a war. But that is still using warlike terminology. So we should avoid using terms that can be linked to war in any way, I would suggest. The next part of this is, or the next part of this definition rather, is aggressive. And what does it mean to be aggressive? Well, the dictionary tells us that to be aggressive means to behave in an angry or violent way to someone else. And obviously what they're talking about here is minority groups. So if you're talking and you're getting all angry about what is going on, and that anger is directed towards one of these minority groups, then you're expressing hostility to them because you are being aggressive towards them. And we shouldn't get angry at these minorities, because they are just taking advantage of what we have offered them. It's our governments that invited them into our countries. It's our governments or our media that covers up the increase in crime that has occurred since our governments invited them into our countries. So we have to be careful that if we're going to get emotional about anything, that emotion is not directed towards these minorities. It can be directed towards our own group. I mean, that's okay. If you want to get angry at what Boris Johnson has done or what other white people are doing, then you're not being hostile to these other groups. But I would suggest we shouldn't get angry anyway, because if you're getting angry, you're losing control of your emotions. And why get angry? What good is that going to do? What is that going to solve? It's not going to solve anything, is it? It's not good worrying about things that you can't actually change. And we can't change things that are going on at the macro level. We can't change things that are going on at the government level. And a lot of people will, or some people may, spend their time just getting angry at what is going on, and they use up their energy in doing that, but they haven't really achieved anything by doing that. Really, the only thing that you can do about the situation we're in is try to improve the situation that you are in, your own individual situation, and try to improve the lives of the white people that are around you. And behaving in an angry or a violent way, or threatening violence, or wishing violence to come upon these ethnic minorities, that means you would be expressing hate speech. It means you would be expressing hostility towards them. And that's probably quite an obvious one, not to be aggressive towards them. The next definition is adverse. Now, adverse means acting or serving to oppose. It means being antagonistic to. So it means deliberately trying to irritate ethnic minorities. And this is the one that the police have tried to use about leaflets that have been sent out that are warning whites that we will become a minority by 2066. The media have tried to imply that these were sent out deliberately to antagonize ethnic minorities. And of course, they weren't sent out to antagonize them. They were sent out to warn whites of what is happening to whites, basically. And you would expect non-whites to also be concerned about white people being replaced and white people having a low birth rate. You would expect them to have some sympathy for us. It's certainly not being done to antagonize non-whites. And of course, when the police then arrest somebody and they look through their devices who have been delivering these leaflets, that's what they're looking for. They're looking to see if that person is antagonistic to ethnic minorities and wants to irritate ethnic minorities in some way. And I would say partially in the past, there have been nationalist attempts to do things like this. So sort of marching through a Muslim area in the way that Britain First used to do was deliberately antagonistic to Muslims. And Patriotic Alternative would never do anything like that. They don't seek to antagonize anyone. Another definition of adverse means contrary to one's interests or welfare, harmful or unfavorable. Now, when we're talking about racial issues, we're talking about what is best for everyone. And when we're talking about nationalism, that is what is best for everyone. It's not good for people to be living in multiculturalism. It would be far better for black people to be living amongst their own people, just as it is better for white people to live amongst our own white people. So the proposals that we make and the policies that we advocate for are not contrary to the interests of non-whites, and they're not contrary to the interests of Jews either. Jews are very concerned about anti-Semitism. How could you do away with anti-Semitism? Well, you could do away with anti-Semitism if all the Jews were living in their own country. Is there any anti-Semitism in Israel? I don't think there could be any anti-Semitism in Israel. There may be perhaps from Palestinians in that area, but again, that is because Israel is not 100% Jewish. If it was 100% Jewish, there would be no anti-Semitism there. And in countries that are 100% black, there's not going to be any racism there either. So it is not contrary to non-whites' interests to be advocating for them to be living with their own people on their own territory. And this is the way that it needs to be put. And it's being perfectly truthful in saying this as well. I mean, we don't wish harm upon any other group. I was listening to Grandpa Dan's podcast yesterday, and he was talking about how much he appreciates real diversity and the real differences between cultures, particularly Japanese culture. He is interested in. And when you put all the groups together, when you put all the racial groups together in one area, you lose that individual culture. You lose the biological integrity of the races, where they interbreed with one another. They stop actually being the original race. They lose all that diversity. We are the ones that genuinely seek to preserve the biological diversity that there is in the world. It's the anti-whites that are really contrary to the interests of non-whites in the way that they seek to move them into white countries and use them as a battering ram against white people. I mean, they're being used as proxy warriors against us. There you go. See, I make my own mistake there of using a warlike term, warrior. But warrior doesn't necessarily have to be a military term, doesn't necessarily have to be a warlike term. You can have spiritual warriors, of course. You can have weekend warriors. You can have keyboard warriors. And I'm not meaning that in a military way, but it does serve to show how easy it is to slip into this language that could be used against you if you're not careful with the context that you use it in. The next one here is contrary. Contrary to. So what does contrary mean? Contrary means a fact or opinion that is the opposite of one already stated. So how does that apply to this? What is the opinion that we could possibly be opposing? So I think what we should do here is look for what these other groups are saying and find whatever there is that we agree with and capitalize upon that. And then we are not advocating for an opinion that is the opposite of one already stated. And As I pointed out, you have groups like Black Lives Matter that are calling for black teachers, for black pupils. They're calling for black judges and black police for black people. So how is it opposing that pre-stated opinion to suggest that we also would like to see that, and we would like to see black people in their own area with black judges and black teachers and black police? We're not contradicting the opinion that is being stated there. We are not contradicting the opinion of wanting to be anti-racist either, because that would do away with racism, and as I pointed out, that would do away with anti-Semitism. So when we put things in these terms, then we're not being contrary to these groups that we are talking about. Finally, the final definition here is unsympathetic. Unsympathetic. And to be sympathetic means to see things from somebody else's point of view. And when you look at what's going on, when you look at this competition between the different racial groups, which is for resources and to compete against one another in Darwinian group selection, then you're not being unsympathetic to them, are you? For instance, if you point out that when the Jews are advocating for multiculturalism and when they're advocating for immigration into Britain, they are simply doing what is best for their group, and we shouldn't expect them not to do things that aren't best for their group. And clearly they are best for their group because they don't stand out so much when there are other racial groups in an area. If you just had Jews and whites living together, Jews would stand out a lot more, because everybody else would be white and Jews would be different. When you have a group which contains whites, Jews, blacks, non-whites, Chinese, Asians, Muslims, all different people, Jews don't stand out so much. And that's their logic. That's why they like multiculturalism, because they're just one group of many different groups then. So it stands to reason. It is to their benefit to advocate for that. And when you have this competition between these groups, it is of benefit to one group to weaken the other group. So we should expect these other groups to try to weaken our group, because we're competing together. We are competing together. That's what Darwinian evolution tells us. And of course, I'm not a believer in macroevolution. I'm not a believer in one kind of being evolving into another kind of being. I don't see any evidence of that. But what I do see is adaptation at the smaller level. And what I do see is groups developing strategies to compete against other groups. And as we develop these strategies, we become stronger as a group. And it basically means that we acquire more land, we acquire more resources, and we're able to produce more of our group. And when you understand things in that way, you can see these different strategies, and you can really appreciate the differences between them, and you can appreciate that they wouldn't actually, what works for one group may not actually work for another group. If you look at black people, their strategy is to produce lots and lots of children, for instance. If you look at some parts in Africa, they have 8 children. One woman will have 8 children. If you look at Jews, their strategy is to highly educate their offspring and to work between one another. They're extremely charitable to one another, and they are extremely fiercely ethno-nationalist. And that's the way that they compete. We compete by having less children, but diverting all our resources onto those children. And again, we have a way of being charitable that the Jews do, only unfortunately our charity extends to everybody else in the world, and we seem to have forgotten that we are actually competing. But there are various different ways that groups can compete in the world. When you understand that, obviously you're going to be sympathetic to them. You're going to be sympathetic to the Jews, say, if Jews talk about how they promoted homosexualism and how they promoted gay marriage, then you can be sympathetic to them in doing that, because they were doing that because they knew that it would weaken the host society that they were in. And if they weaken the host society that they're in, and they weaken the bonds between that host society is going to be less likely to band together along lines that the Jews won't be able to join. That's why they're against ethnic groups based on ethnicity, because it means that a Jew would not be able to join that group because he would be part of a different ethnicity. So they will do whatever they can to weaken their competitors. And that is because they have a very finely honed understanding of this competition that is going on between the extended kinship groups. And they've been fighting for many years to get themselves to the top of the pile. And the problem is not with them doing that, because that is only to be expected, that you will do the best for your group. The problem is that our group is not doing that. We have forgotten that we are in this competition. We have forgotten that first and foremost, we are white people. We've forgotten that all whites are our extended family. We've forgotten that our nation is based upon ethnicity, and it's based on shared ancestry, and that what we should be doing is working hard to improve the prospects for our nation and to improve the prospects for our children. We have forgotten all of that. These other groups have not forgotten that. These groups understand that, and they are doing that, and we should be sympathetic to them for doing that. It is not a problem that they are doing any of this. The problem lies with ourselves. The fault lies with ourselves. So when you describe things in that manner, you're being entirely sympathetic to these other minorities. And it's entirely true. This is the truthful way to look at it. When you look at the British laws like this, I mean, it's not that they're being particularly used to penalise whites. Because some people will say, well, hang on a minute. When we look at what the Jews talk about, they talk about exactly the same things. The Jews are talking about how they run Hollywood, how they've got so many of them in politics, how they've got so many of them in banking. And yet when we do the same, we get accused of hate speech. Well, it's the way that you talk about it. When the Jews talk about it, and they talk about these things that they're doing, they're being sympathetic to the Jews. So when we talk about it, we also have to be sympathetic to the Jews. It's no good blaming them for doing that. It's no good saying, well, this is a terrible thing that the Jews are looking out for other Jews, because it's not a terrible thing. It's a good thing. The terrible thing is that white people are not doing the same for whites. That's the important thing. And when you talk about it in that way, then you're sympathetic to the Jews, and you're not breaking the law. So it's not that the law is being used particularly to penalise whites. It may seem that way. I mean, it's the same as when blacks say, well, all these laws are racist because we end up coming on the wrong side of the law more often than whites do. So it must be racism, or we don't earn as much money as whites, so it must be racism. And we know that it's not racism. It's just the way that the blacks behave, because that's just natural to them. And I think it's the same instance here. It's not that the laws are being used particularly to penalise us, although we do seem to be the only ones that get into trouble with it. It's because we are not sympathetic to these other groups when we describe it. And also, when you look at what these other groups are saying, we will say, well, they can be anti-white all the time. They can say whatever they like about whites, and they're never accused of hate speech. Well, that means we can do the same, doesn't it? It means that if we are pointing out that the faults lie with white people for why the situation is the way that it is, and it does lie with us, it is our governments that have invited these people in. It is our governments that tied one hand behind our back by making these speech laws. It's our governments that legalized homosexuality and the promotion of it to children. Yes, these other groups may have advocated for that, but we should expect them to advocate for that, because it's in their best interests. The people that are at fault here is white people, and we are allowed to criticize white people. So when you look at the way that the law is, it should be possible for us to structure our discussions so that we don't break the law. And if we don't break the law, then the police are happy, and they're not going to be arresting us and throwing us in prison. And the way to avoid that is to avoid being hostile to these other groups. So I hope I've explained it well enough. I expect I'll probably get lots of criticism for what I'm saying in the comment section from people that don't actually understand what the point that I am making here. We need to make sure that what we do is within the law. And it's not against the law to speak the truth. It's against the law to show hostility to the, well, it's not even against the law to show hostility. It's against the law to have an intent to incite hatred. And the way that that is proved by the police is if they find that you use hostile language or prejudicial language. And I would argue with this prejudicial language that what we talk about is not pre-Judas. It is post-Judas. It is based upon statistics. It's based upon facts. It's based upon investigation. It's not based upon saying, oh, somebody has black skin. I don't like that. So I'm going to say nasty things about him. That is not what is going on at all. It's not prejudice. It's post-Judas. So again, if we make that fact clear and we explain where our reasoning comes from and why we believe multiculturalism is not a good thing and that it is not a good thing for all groups, we're not just saying that it's not a good thing for whites, it's not a good thing for all groups, then we should be okay and we should be within the law. Well, I'm not going to get enough time to go into these hate incidents, but I do want to finish on a positive point here. And it looks like there is a bill going through Parliament, a bill to seriously reduce illegal migrant crossings and end international laws holding the UK back from turning boats back to France, looks likely to now be passed into law after MPs gave it their backing today. And obviously, we know what the Conservative government are like, and I doubt whether this will do what they have been promising to do. I mean, Priti Patel has been saying that she's going to reform the immigration system and she's going to stop all these illegal boats coming in. She's been saying that for a couple of years now and still hasn't done so. So we'll have to wait and see whether this actually comes true. But if we keep following this through, it does look as if they may actually use physical force to send these boats back. Home Secretary Priti Patel said the legislation named the Nationality and Borders Bill will break the business model of people trafficking gangs facilitating illegal crossings into the UK, as the country recorded the highest daily number of people sailing across the Channel on Monday. The bill puts forward the most extensive changes to the UK's immigration system in history and includes a series of measures, from professional assessments of the age of asylum seekers to laws that will make it easier for migrants to be deported. And of course, we know that each time they try to deport these illegal asylum seekers, there's an army of lawyers that jump in there and make lots of money from the free legal aid that they get, and we're just not able to deport them. So I'm not certain whether that will come true. The bill, which passed its second reading in the Commons this evening by 366 votes to 265, will give Border Force officers the powers to turn back migrant boats attempting to cross the Channel from France and use reasonable force if necessary. Reasonable force if necessary. How are they going to do that then? Are they going to tow these boats back? I mean, what they really need to do is be able to pick these people up and then take them to somewhere else, an island where they will be safe. They're talking about them putting them in Rwanda, actually, setting up a camp in Rwanda that they can take these people to, where they will be safe from war, which is essentially what they are asking for, that they are claiming asylum from war. So, as I was saying earlier, you look at that and think, well, how can we align this with our views? They want to be safe from war. Well, why don't we put them in a British-held territory in Africa that is safe from war? That achieves their goals and it achieves our goals. And it does look as if the government are actually looking at doing this. Again, I don't know whether that is just going to be hot air that they're talking about putting them in another country that's actually held by Britain. That's what they did in Australia, and that solved the problem in Australia. this reasonable force, if necessary, to turn these boats back? Does that mean they could fire upon them? I doubt very much whether they will be suggesting that. Some people might say, well, firing upon them, that's not going to be very good for them, is it? But hang on a minute. If they did fire upon them, yes, one or two of them might end up getting hurt, but that would probably prevent anybody else from trying it. And if you think of the numbers of people that they tell us that have actually drowned from trying to make this route, if you could prevent them from doing that by firing on them and using reasonable force, you would only have to do it once or twice, and then they would stop coming. And you would save these people from drowning, from attempting this dangerous route across the channel. So these are the ways that we can explain these things, so that we don't fall foul of this law. Finally, they say prison sentences for those who enter the country without permission will increase from 6 months to 4 years, and a maximum of life imprisonment for convicted people smugglers will be introduced. And again, we just have to wait and see whether these people were imprisoned. It'd be far better just to put them on an island somewhere and keep them safe from war. That would keep them happy, and that would keep us happy. But as I say, I think this is at least a move in the right direction, especially if they can actually use reasonable force to send these boats back. But we'll have to wait and see. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.